Hello and welcome to Inside Right, episode 11. And here we are, John Beach, in the UK.
We are in Liverpool.
The pretty first exciting. Episode of the UK. And we are joined by no other than Natasha Dowie. How are you?
I am great. Nice to see you and to hear some Aussie accents.
Aussie accents, yep. You've played in Melbourne. We'll touch on that. The coffee culture there is very good too, and we got some nice coffee. You gave us all the best places
yes.
in Liverpool.
Liverpool's not too bad.
We put on a great game last night for us to watch last night.
We saw the Toulouse game last night. How do we all think that went?
Do you know what? Very well. Yeah, lots of goals. Looked comfortable, and especially saving some of our big hitters as well. So yeah. I think all in all, a good night at Anfield.
Yeah, world-class bench.
Yes, I know.
Shane, the Wiz before the game last night. Wiz, what do you think the score is going to be? He says 5-1.
No, that's impressive. I went 3-0.
Should have got some money on it.
Yeah, I was going 3-0.
My heart sunk and then Salah came on. I'm like, no, fuck.
Yeah.
So, Tash, let's start off with where did your football, how did your love for football come to be?
So my family are big into football. My uncle played professionally for West Ham and Southampton, played for Northern Ireland, and then obviously went into managing in the Premier League. My dad was more semi-pro, but it was a big footballing family.
Yep.
I was the first of two. My sister was a bit more of a girly girl. I guess I was the tomboy. So literally as soon as I popped out of my mum's tummy, it was like I had a football in my hand. That's all I remember as a kid, playing football. And you know, back then we didn't have the opportunity to play with the boys. So my dad got me and a couple of my friends and we just used to go and have a kickabout in our local town.
Fantastic.
And kind of there the journey started, really.
Yeah, wow. Fantastic. Did you have any footballing idols growing up?
Do you know what? I actually used to watch like Thierry Henry, you know, because when I was younger, there wasn't many female kind of idols to look up to.
Yeah.
I was aware of Abby Wambach and her style of play as a centre forward for America. Yeah, she was incredible. Big, strong powerhouse. But yeah, it was mainly in the men's game really when I was growing up.
Yeah, well, what did you like about Thierry Henry?
Scored goals.
Scored goals.
I knew I wanted to be a striker. It was something that I enjoyed. I always remember as a kid playing in the back garden with my football and my goal and no keeper and just basically scoring goals and commentating and getting the winner all the time. And
fantastic. Who did you support growing up? Because like you just said to us beforehand, it wasn't Liverpool.
No, I'm sorry to say that. Yeah. But
it,
do you know what? I think it's probably a good thing. I never really supported a team. So it was really wherever my uncle was. So West Ham, I remember there's a video of me as a little kid wearing my West Ham kit and Dowie number 9 on the back. And so, I used to kind of follow him. And then when he was managing Crystal Palace in the Premier League, follow Palace. But then as soon as I moved up to Liverpool and signed for Liverpool, met my partner, Becky, it was a no-brainer. You know, this was my new home and my club.
Fantastic. Now let's talk about your professional career. What club did you start at? And how were you identified by scouts?
Yeah, so Harpen and Colts was my local town where I used to have a kickabout. And then I actually then got scouted by Watford and went through their centre of excellence and then started playing for the first team when I was 15. And then that's kind of when I got scouted by England at the under 15s age group. And then the journey really started from there. I went to then Fulham and then had a spell at Charlton. And yeah, the kind of journey goes then and there was 14 more teams.
Fantastic.
And did you always, like you said, you're in the backyard, like scoring the goals, right? Like Thierry Henry. Did you always, were you always a striker or did you fancy yourself in a different position as you grew up?
Always a striker. And I think the modern game now, players are a lot more versatile and I feel like players can play like two or three positions.
Yep.
That wasn't me. You know, I'm an out and out number 9. Get in the box, get on the end of crosses.
Yeah.
You know, if ever, which was very rarely in my career, if ever the manager, you know, tried to move me out wide or move me in the 10, I wasn't having any of it. Get me back in the middle.
Did you ever have found yourself like Olivier Giroud the other day, finding himself having a playing goal or something like that? Did that ever happen during your career?
Do you know what? No, but I always used to say in training, I feel like it'd be really fun, you know, just to have like an 11v11 fun game where we can change positions because I always thought it'd be cool to play centre half and to be able to see the whole pitch because as a striker you never see anything really. It's always like players are behind you
and you've got to make the runs
so it'd be fascinating to see like the whole picture in front of you.
It must be hugely, I guess, satisfying for you watching this massive global surge in popularity for a game that you've played and loved. But I imagine back when you were 16, 18, you know, starting even in your 20s, you know, you just watched all the money going into the men's game, right? So tell me, what's it like now as you're watching this, say, this global surge? You've just become an ambassador for Liverpool. There's just, you know, you've got the Women's Super League. You've got, it's just all happening over. What's that like and how do you reflect back to what it was like then?
it is crazy to think within the last 10 years, you know, I was playing for Liverpool, you know, almost getting paid per game to play. And now you kind of look at the contracts that are getting thrown around, and that's within the 10 years. You know, we used to have to train at 8 p.m. at night after the under eights boys had finished.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it was two or three times. Yeah, I remember at Everton, we were at the training ground, and we'd be the last ones to be able to train at the training ground. And it was 8 o'clock till about 10 o'clock at night. And then I'd have to travel back down to London, and I wouldn't get home till about 1, 2 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
You know, and now you see them moving into Melwood, you know. Breakfast, lunch. You know, I probably retired at the wrong time. Yeah. But, you know, people always say to me, would you want to play now? You know, start your career now. And actually, it sounds bizarre, but I wouldn't, because I feel like I got the best of both worlds.
Okay.
I think that now there's so much pressure for the female players because of how big the publicity is and how much they're like celebrities now.
Because you were kind of under the radar a bit,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Whereas I feel like I've had the best, where you've had to work and graft and it wasn't easy. But then also the privilege of being a pro football player and being able to have it as my full-time job. But it is, it's brilliant to see. When I see them playing at the Emirates in front of 54,000 people, first game of the season, you know, it's brilliant to see.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's kind of scary to think maybe in 10, 15 years' time, just where the game's going to be.
We were sitting there, you know, the semi-final of the World Cup in Sydney. Unbelievable. You know, it was just absolutely unbelievable. But obviously you had your, going back to the start of your career, I think it was, if I've got this right, it was Watford, and it was Fulham, and it was Charlton.
Yes.
And then Wes and I were talking about this, and you entered what we call the dark days of your career. When you started playing with the blue side of Merseyside, I should say. With the Toffees, talk to me about that. How did you get through those years?
Do you know what? It was crazy. So I was at Charlton at the time, and the men's Premier League team got relegated.
Yep.
So the women's team folded. So I didn't have a team. And it was then, where do I go? Mo Marley was my England manager at the time at under-19s, and she was manager of Everton. And then I remember Vic Akers at Arsenal, 15 minutes away from where my family lived in Hertfordshire, had dominated for, you know, the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Who would I have picked? Okay, let's go for Everton. You know, a lot of people said, why? You know, 4 hours up the M1, M6, you know, to play for a team that, you know, was
probably... So you were still living in London?
I was still living in London, yeah. And I
training
made the choice.
Here.
Yep. And it was just because I always liked to be the underdog. You know, I always wanted to knock Arsenal off their pedestal a little bit. And I thought that if I went to Arsenal, you know, it'll be easy. You know, I wouldn't feel like maybe I'd really achieved anything. So I remember I used to travel. We trained twice a week, and I'd come up. And to be honest, look, I know I'm a Liverpool fan, but probably my best years playing-wise was at Liverpool and Everton, you know, my most successful years.
Yep.
You know, I met my partner, and now my wife, Becky, you know. So for me, it was almost like it was fate. Won the FA Cup, scored the winner in the 118th minute, won the League Cup, you know, narrowly missed out on winning the league at the last game of the season against Arsenal on goal difference with Everton. So, you know, the 5 years there were incredible. And, you know, and I'm still really proud of those years.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to talk about, the FA Cup final against Arsenal. When I was watching the highlights, I was like, oh my goodness. Wow. Two goals in that match. Talk us through that. How did you feel? FA Cup final. Yeah. First FA Cup final, I
was it
imagine.
Wembley?
It was at Nottingham Forest, actually. Yeah. There's 30,000. And actually, I'd played in one before for Charlton, but we got beat 4-1 by Arsenal. And I was 18 years old at the time. So this was my second FA Cup final.
Redemption.
Yeah, redemption. Yeah. 30,000. I remember being so in the zone. I even look back at pictures of me in the kind of warm-up and in the huddle. And I was just like, I looked like I was possessed.
Focus. Yeah.
And I remember when I scored the first goal, and then it was, you know, 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2. And I remember it going to extra time, and I just thought, this cannot go to penalties. You know, as a player, you don't want to win it. Like, it's just too nerve-wracking.
Mm.
And I remember Jill Scott goes up, wins the header, Brooke Chaplin gets half-turned, slips me in. And at the time, I thought she'd slip me too wide. But Emma Byrne comes out.
Yeah,
she comes out. And then I just remember dinking it over into the far corner, jumping into the crowd, hugging this boy. I don't even think he was a fan, an Everton fan or Arsenal fan, but I was just hugging him. Everyone was going wild. All my family were there. And honestly, that would probably be one of the highlights of my career. I remember we literally, it sounds awful, we didn't even shower. We just whacked on our trackies, got the bus, the coach straight back up to Everton, and went out and had the best night
That's
out,
awesome.
Partied hard.
Amazing.
The goosebumps of like hearing the commentary, like, Darwin!
Yeah.
So good. When you finished in Everton in 2012, you joined the Mighty Reds.
Yes.
How did it feel putting on that famous number 9 shirt?
Oh, unreal. You know, it wasn't easy leaving Everton, to be honest, because I've been there for 5 years. But when Matt Beard approached me, and I'd worked with Beardy at Charlton, he was the assistant when I was there, and he said, look, we're going to go full time. It's the first time ever that a women's team in England were going to have a full time program, training 5 times a week. He was talking to me about bringing Americans in, you know, Swedish players, German players, you know, all these Icelandic players. And in England, foreign players hadn't really come over yet. So yep. I thought, this sounds so cool. I can't really like miss this opportunity. The first time that I'd get paid properly as well to play. And so I just thought, let's do it. And it was the best thing I've ever done, you know, to win the league back to back, you know, with the team. And I've played for 20 years, 25 years, played in 16 different countries, six different teams, 6 countries. But those 2 years at Liverpool were the best by far.
Yeah. And you, what a couple of seasons for you too. Like goals.
Well, we're going to peg to that in your first stint at 43 goals in 59 games or thereabouts. And yeah, there were some big tournaments going on internationally at that time that you didn't get picked for, being the Olympics and the World Cup. Like, was it just like you didn't suit the way they wanted to play? Was it the England manager and you just like what?
Because it
comes down to small details, right? You know, it's either you or somebody else, and they went. It wasn't you, and you must have thought to yourself, as a striker, I can't do anymore.
Yeah,
I've scored so many goals. Mm-hmm. Why are you not picking me? Tell me about that.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And I think it's something that people always say to me in my career, you should have played for England more. And look, I think that I've always been a player. When I was younger, it hurt me, of course. But I think the older I've got and the more mature I've got is that actually maybe not playing for England as much has allowed me to travel the world. But at the time, look, when I was Golden Boot, we had won the league and I'm not getting picked.
Go figure.
It was tough to take. And look, Hope Power was a manager at the time and she'd been in charge for, I think it was 15 years. And look, let's be honest, my face obviously just didn't fit for her. I can't really explain any other way. Yeah, you know, people know my relationship.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to her about it?
No, not really. It was quite cutthroat. Yeah, it was literally like you got an email not selected or email selected, and it never was really explained to you. And unfortunately, back then, because the women's game wasn't as big, the media wasn't much around it. It'd be like Rachel Daly, for instance, not going to the World Cup.
Yeah, I was going to say, like now, you know, it'd be an uproar, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't have happened. So
Harry Kane not getting paid for England. Yeah.
So that was tough to take, but I really see it as I got to travel the world.
Yeah.
I got to play in Australia. I'm playing in all these different countries and I made the most of, you know, a bad situation. But I'm proud still that I played for England 14 times, scored 5 goals. It's something that I'm really proud that I've been able to achieve. But yeah, I think I deserved more.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Then you joined Australia after Liverpool. Well, didn't join Australia. You went to Australia and played for Melbourne Victory. Our seasons are in the summer. How did you find the heat? And did you get the play with Sam Kerr against?
Yes, I remember when I first got approached about going to Australia. Look, I'm going to be honest, I didn't even know they had a league over there for the women's team. And I actually told
it. Most people don't know they got a men's league either, don't worry.
So, but I thought when they said, look, summer, 3 or 4 months, I thought, this is a win-win. Like, let's go. And as soon as I got there, the people were so friendly. I just loved the culture. I'm a big foodie. So the brunches, the coffee, the sun.
Yeah. Melbourne's just unreal for that.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
And you wouldn't think that I'm a sun worshipper with my skin, but I love the sun. I remember we'd go for coffee and we'd be sitting outside and everyone would be inside and they'd be going, are you mad? Like, we'd be sweating, but I would just love the feeling of the sun.
Yeah.
But no, honestly, with regards to that, you know, the heat was tough, you know, because we played on 4G a lot of the time and, you know, that kind of gets really hot and kickoffs would be at like 4 p.m. during the day. So my fitness levels definitely improved playing over there. And with regards to Sam Kerr, look, the thing with me and Sam is we always were fighting for the Golden Boot. And I think I would have won the Golden Boot a lot more if she hadn't been over there. But it was always me and her neck and neck and we had some good battles. I eventually did win the Golden Boot when she actually wasn't in the league. She had left, but no, she's a world-class player and, you know, someone that I respect very much. And yeah, I love my battles against her.
What was your favourite goal at Melbourne Victory? Do you have one?
Ooh. I'd actually have to say Brisbane away. Okay. I did like a kind of bicycle kick.
That's what I was showing you this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a sort of sideways
kick, right?
That's Peter the one. Sort of thing.
Love that. Yeah, I remember Tegan whipped a ball in and I've chested it and then kind of like volleyed it. That's probably the best one I scored.
I said, to be fair, Wes, when you showed me, I said, later on, we're going to talk about that goal.
Yes.
And I said it wasn't that goal.
Now, I'm not sure if you know that goal that we're going to talk about, but I'm going to show you.
You can guess which goal you've scored, which in our opinion, is that
amazing.
Goal. Anyway, continue. You've obviously had a great relationship with Matt Beard. you know, over the years you've been coached by him in various organisations, mm-hmm. including a short spell in America in Boston.
Yep.
The Boston Breakers.
Now, obviously, you know, the Americans has, I guess if you look at women's football, I remember speaking to American friends of mine 20 years ago and they thought soccer was a women's game. Mm-hmm. In their world, soccer, women's game, yep. right? And because it was so huge throughout their university systems and everything. So that was, I think, why the US was so strong internationally for so long. But when you got there, what was it like? Was it a professional league? Mm-hmm. Was it what was? I mean, Boston's another great city, right? I mean, tell me about your experience in Boston.
Do you know what? It was incredible, challenging, but incredible. So I remember I went over there. It was the first time, except for Australia, playing abroad. You know, a big decision for me to move over there, but luckily my partner Becky came with me. And the area that we were staying was really cool. So we trained at Harvard Stadium. So really cool, like, you know, that kind of vibe of university vibe. And Boston, the city itself, was beautiful as well. But I actually really struggled with the ruthlessness and the cutthroatness of how the players were. And look, there's no surprise. That's why they win so much, because it's dog eat dog out there. But I was a little bit more used to that kind of team environment, and I felt like it was
so
just
everyone was
quite
in it for themselves.
Yeah, a little bit. That's the vibe
team
I got.
Ethic,
And look, it might have been different at different clubs, but when I was at Boston, I really found that, you know, it was dog eat dog. It was really like, look, I'm coming for your position.
Really?
So I kind of struggled with that for 2 years, to be honest. But look, I played a lot and I was top goal scorer there for both of the seasons, and I made of it the best that I could. It was a really sad ending the way it ended, obviously, with the owners pulling the plug and then obviously the club folding and collapsing completely. And I remember actually being in Australia and Melbourne when I found this out.
Yeah.
And I remember going into the draft picks and when we were going to find out what clubs we were going to. And I didn't get selected. What? And I remember it's because
ridiculous.
Of my and I remember it's because of my contract, basically, because I was an international, my contract was maybe a bit higher than others. So clubs couldn't afford to basically sign me up. And I remember crying in my apartment in Australia, the other side of the world, knowing that I didn't have a club to play for. You know, there was only a couple of weeks till the season started, and I was thinking, what am I going to do? And I guess then that's when I moved to Sweden.
Yeah. There you go. Interesting. I want to talk about that season in the W League when you won the Premiership.
Yeah.
Talk me through about that season and how you went as a player and how the team chemistry was.
Yeah. You know what? It was brilliant, the journey that I had at Melbourne Victory, because I remember when I first went over there, I think they had dominated a lot over the years, but then they lost a lot of players to Melbourne City because they had the money, the backing of Man City. But I remember Jeff Hopkins came in and he basically just changed everything. You know, the first couple of years, I remember we were slowly moving up the table, improving, getting better players in. Then we came so close and I think we made semi-finals but got beat. And then the year that we won the Premier League, you know, the squad that we had, you know, we had such a togetherness.
Who was in that?
Christine Nahn, you know, the American, so good. You know, Emily Gilnick. Who else did we have? We had the likes of...
Very young Kyra Cooney Cross in that team.
15 years old.
Yeah, she was 15.
I remember Kyra, exactly that. And, you know, we didn't have the best players. You know, when you looked in the likes of City and some of the other teams, Perth were pushing us with Sam Kerr, but we just had this togetherness that we had each other's backs. You're spot on with... That's what I love to see, the likes of Angie Beard, you know, playing in the World Cup for the Philippines. Kyra now, who was a 15-year-old kid now... Yeah. A regular starter for the national team at Arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just brilliant to see like these players developing.
It was awesome watching Ian Wright. I loved Ian Wright. You probably know, but seems to be so authentic and real, you know. And he was down there and he was making a big splash with the commentary and things during the Women's World Cup in Australia, and he was clearly enjoying himself. And then he would tweet like during the games and he just said, this girl. And apparently it was a little bit influential in getting her to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Because he goes, this is something about this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But no, honestly, when we won the Premier League, it was just phenomenal. But do you know the thing that I always find a bit strange over in Australia, and it's kind of that American mentality, is that actually the Premier League doesn't seem to be as big as winning like the knockoff championship game, because then we got beat in the semi-final and we didn't make the final. And I feel like they make a bigger thing of that. But we won the season.
It's a really weird thing, because like I was born in the UK and moved to Australia via a couple of countries, but got there when I was sort of in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so you win the league, but you don't win the league.
Yeah.
Then you've got to go and start a whole new league.
Exactly.
Where, you know, and it's good, the grand final, you're right. In any sport down there, they all have this system where the grand final winner is determined from anyone in the top four or six or eight. Or, you know, it's kind of crazy.
That's probably the one thing I wish I had gone and won, but, you know.
So you're not a fan of the final series
format? No, I think consistency. That's just a one-off game.
Yeah,
I get that. So we're going to move countries again now.
Okay.
So we were chatting about it on the plane on the way over here, and we can only think of three players who later in their career went to AC to finish off, right? And we got Zlatan Ibrahimovic, David Beckham,
and Natasha Dowie.
Not too bad company.
So it's a hell of a trio there that went late in their game. And you know, what was the Italian football landscape? Mm. Because obviously I'm interested in – because the men's Serie A game, you know, I used to watch a lot of it growing up, and it was very so slow, defensive-minded, and it was more of an international style of game to watch than something like the Premier League, which is sort of more rip shit and bust, you know.
100%.
So, did you find it more tactical? Was it slower? As you said, as a traditional number nine, how did you adapt to that?
Yeah, you're spot on. I think, you know, I was meant to sign a 2-year contract at Milan, and unfortunately, it was COVID, which was gutting because the fans weren't allowed in the stadiums, and we had such a big following, you know, and the fans over there are really, you know, football mad.
Full on.
And when I went to Milan, look, the lifestyle was incredible, going to Lake Como of a weekend, but the football style, you're spot on. I think a lot of, let's say, theatrical behaviour, and that's something that I'm just
they
not used to.
Their stuff,
yeah, they do. And I, even with some of my teammates, I used to say, get up. Like, it's embarrassing. But
they have TV shows showing the best theatrics from the week.
And like, the thing that I really struggled with was the language barrier. So I'm a big character, I'm a big personality. I like to be like a voice heard in the changing room. And look, I struggled with the Italian. You know, we got lessons, but I really found it hard to pick up. They didn't speak amazing English. The manager spoke zero English, so we had to have a teammate translate everything. So that was probably the thing that I struggled with the most. Okay. But look, we made history. You know, we made Champions League for the first time ever, second in the league behind Juventus. You know, unfortunately now they're kind of dropped down a little bit. But no, it's probably one of the proudest moments to wear that number 10 shirt for AC Milan, you know, and unreal, honestly.
God, that's just, sorry.
And scored two in the derby. Too,
exactly, you know. And the fans even now still message me and say that I'm still like a hero and legend over there. So it's nice that I had such an impact within like
that
a short period.
Shirt, like of all the, you know, like you've
it
got
is.
Somewhere special.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that Milan shirt, when I look at it, it's just, it's classy, you know, typical Italian, just stylish. Yeah.
And then obviously you come back to English football, which has now become the WSL.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a whole different thing now because we're talking about a professional league. We're talking about, you know, training full time, very different league than what you started in. I guess coming back late in your career then, obviously back to Liverpool? Was it?
It was Reading, actually.
Straight to Reading.
And then on into Liverpool for that sort of big final of the year, or a couple of years. But talk to me about you must have come back in thinking, my goodness, this is so different now from what I started. Well, you said you were training previously, you were only training twice a week. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming now it's every day.
You know, it's crazy. I remember when I decided to leave Milan, and it was mainly because of COVID, and I just missed family, and it was hard for my partner, Becky, because she was just stuck in an apartment. So I thought, let's go back home. And you know what? It was so nerve-wracking because when I'd left England, not to be big-headed, but I was a bit of a star. You know, I'd won the league. I was golden boot. So there was a lot of pressure for me to come back. And I wanted to show everyone how I developed over the last 7 years as a player, as a person. And look, I'm not going to lie. I found it tough because, look, I was 30, maybe 33. So none of the big teams really probably wanted to sign someone of that age. Mm-hmm. So I signed for Reading. And that's no disrespect for Reading, but they were a mid-table team.
Yes.
And as a centre-forward, I was used to scoring goals. I was used to getting opportunities. Yeah. I was used to competing. I found it so frustrating. You know, I'd be getting maybe one opportunity a game, not touching the ball. I wasn't involved. And that was probably mentally, physically, everything, the hardest year and a half of my career. Okay. I really wasn't happy, you know, and I wasn't enjoying my football. And it's probably the first time in my career that, you know, I didn't get excited to go to training. And that's when I thought, I have to make the decision right now because I don't want to end my career like this.
No.
And that's when I spoke to my agent, I spoke to the manager at Reading and said, look, I'm not happy. Like, let's kind of come to an agreement. Maybe I can leave in the January transfer window. You're not getting the best out of me. I'm not getting the best out of you. And luckily, they let me go and I spoke to Beardy and that's when I got the loan move to Liverpool and it was the best.
I want to talk about the goal.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
In our opinion. Okay.
Go on.
Stevie G has a goal. Sam Kerr has a goal. Chloe Kelly has a goal.
Okay.
And we think this is your goal.
Okay.
You chipped the keeper from about 40 yards out. Do you remember that goal?
Is this for Reading?
Yes,
left foot.
I can show you the video if you want.
No, I remember, I remember every goal.
40 yards out.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was
not
nice.
Not far off what Beckham did in his first game.
Did
you?
No. Did you see the keeper off the line or was this just instinctive?
No, do you know what? I saw all week we've been practicing and to be fair to our manager, they said the keeper is always off her line. So all week in training, we were working on lobs, but mainly with my right foot because my left foot isn't as strong as my right. So I hadn't been doing any lobs with my left foot. But I just remember at the time, I took a touch and I saw her off her line. And look, if you had asked me to do that again, my left foot, I'm not too sure where it would have gone, but I just seemed to hit it cleanly, you know, and that's probably, one of the best finishes.
It just looked like, you know,
it was nice.
Stood back and watched it going in like that. You know.
I've actually got the goal
for
you.
Okay, go on.
Against Sunderland.
Oh, yes.
When you were wearing the white Liverpool shirt in 2015.
I think
it got goal of the year.
Yes.
Goal of the season.
Little dink again.
Yeah, little dink again. Was that with the right foot?
That was with the right foot
this
time.
And left?
Yeah.
I love that you still remember which foot it was.
Every goal I remember. As a striker, I think you're guilty of doing that.
Yeah. But then coming back to Liverpool, you know, like you think about players that have, like, you know, you had your first amazing time with them. You scored a lot of goals. What's it like coming back the second time? Mm. There must be a feeling of, I've got this. I know this. This is comfortable. I'm going to do really, you know, I imagine it doesn't come with the nerves of being there the first time. You're at a late stage in your career.
Do you know what? It's so funny you say that. The complete opposite.
Really?
It's crazy. I remember.
So you felt nervous.
I felt so nervous. And it's crazy because I was 34. But I think it was because I just cared so much.
Yeah.
And at the time when I came back, they were in the relegation zone.
Yeah.
And it was like, I knew I only had 6 months and potentially I didn't know then what was going to happen, whether I was going to get a contract or what was next for me. So even though I was excited to be back, I wanted to help them so much, almost too much, I think, that the nerves got the better of me. And I remember my first couple of games back, I just was trying too hard, you know, and Beardy actually sat me down and he went, Tash, like, relax. Like,
a bit. Yeah.
You score goals. Mm. You've been playing football all your life. Like, just be you. Like, we know what you're good at. And actually then I started to relax and obviously I scored my two goals against City
Villa.
And Villa. Got obviously the record for WSL goals, 20 goals and helped the team, you know, get safety comfortably. And to hear the fans again singing my song, you know, I think it was the perfect way to end my football career.
Fantastic. Now you're Liverpool ambassador, joining other legends like Ian Rush and Kenny Dalglish. How does it feel doing this and what does it entail?
You know what? Every day I have to pinch myself and I don't think I'll ever really understand this role. You know, I wake up and I'm like, as if I'm Liverpool Football Club's ambassador. It just doesn't seem real. And I think this kind of last couple of months has all been a bit of a whirlwind for me with my Guard of Honour at Anfield.
Yeah, we saw that. That was amazing.
It's like,
honestly,
it's like it was nearly, if not as good as my wedding day. My partner wasn't very happy when I said that. Yeah.
If they'd done that for me, that would have been about my wedding.
Yeah.
Apologies, Kim.
But no, I think for me now, I'm just so passionate about, you know, the impact that I can have, being the first female, you know, breaking down walls, working with the foundation, really helping the women's game grow even more. I'm working at the academy now, mentoring the under 18 boys, first female again within the men's kind of setup there. So that's another barrier broken. You know, working for LFC TV, I'm passionate about my media work. So that's been great to be able to get to the games and do the co-coms. But I'm just wanting to get involved in everything. Next month, I'm going to South Africa for five days to go to the schools and to give back. So I feel like that's going to be really rewarding as
well.
But I just want to get going. You know, as a football player, you always have that kind of desire, you know, that kind of purpose, that goal that you're kind of achieving come a Sunday game.
Yeah.
So now it's kind of a different role for me. You know, what's my purpose? But I'm still going to be as passionate, you know, in this role. Exactly.
Yeah. There you go. a couple of quick fires.
Okay.
How do you want to do this?
Oh, God,
do you
I'm
want
nervous.
Me to go? You do you want me to do one? Then you do
yeah,
one.
Yeah, this is we'll share
it. Okay.
The most
just there's no wrong answers. Whatever okay. you know, whatever you yeah.
Okay, just quick fires, whatever.
Okay.
No pressure.
Okay.
The most talented player you've played with. Raw talent.
Ooh, I'm gonna have to go Farrah Williams.
Yeah. Farrah Williams.
Fair. Yes. Yeah.
Fair.
Left foot, right foot. Did things that no one else could do.
Yeah, there you go.
As a striker, who was your favourite player to play with in terms of providing assists?
Oh, Christine Nahn.
Yeah,
American. I knew that as soon as she got the ball, I could just make my run and the ball would be at my feet.
Yeah.
So good.
Which was your favourite manager to play under?
Oh, this is tough. Oh, I'm going to have to give you one, aren't I? I'm going to have to say Jeff Hopkins,
okay.
just because he was like a father figure, you know, and he's just really good people person.
And is there anyone you would like to, have, as a manager or a player, played under or with that you didn't get
Serena
a chance?
Serena Wiegmann.
Yeah.
I just think the way that she has transformed this England team now is phenomenal. And I think she plays players for their form and for how they're performing.
I think it's time to step aside Gareth and it's time to put Serena in charge.
Yes.
I'd love to.
And maybe Klopp.
Maybe
Klopp.
Yeah.
Play under Jurgen.
Yeah.
The press.
Exactly.
Yeah. Salah, Mane, Dowie.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to skip through. Actually, no, I'm not. All-time five-a-side team.
Okay.
Did Sam Kerr make that?
No, because I'm in.
Fair enough.
We've got Rachel Brown in goal. I'm going to have Becky Easter, my partner, as my defender because she'll just smash everyone. So I love that. Christine Nahn in midfield. Rose Lavelle just behind me. And then I'm the forward. So that's my five-a-side.
There you go.
So the talk about some young talents coming through now. Yeah. We start obviously the World Cup brought a few like to bear like you know performance amazing performances from like Mary Fowler from the Matildas.
Yes.
She really, you know, she's grown and up the foot after the World Cup. Now starting regularly for City. You know, Linda Caicedo.
Yeah.
You know, who are some of the other young talents you see in the game now that you think she's special?
Yeah, I think Kyra's got to be there. Kyra Cooney-Cross. I think I actually would like to see her playing more for Arsenal.
Yep.
I don't know whether they're just slowly bedding her in,
I'm
surprised she hasn't played more already. But I just think I could see something special when she was 15, but I think she's matured massively over the last couple of years. So definitely Kyra. And then who else would I say? No, she'd probably be the main one for me. Watch this space for her.
Thoughts on Missy Bo-Kearns?
Do you know what? Missy's a talent, you know, and I think the thing with Missy is that because she's the scouser in the team, there's a lot of pressure on her, a lot of media publicity. And I feel like I just want them to make sure they don't put too much pressure on her too early.
Probably the same with Trent and some others, right?
Exactly.
Where they just get picked on because they're like, you should be special because you're 100%. Local.
100%.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, look, she had a good first season in the WSL last year, scored some important goals. You know, so for me, it's just, look, keep humble, keep grounded. She's someone that works hard, so I'm sure she'll do very well.
There you go.
Last question. Last question for this one. Just men's, women's, whatever, greatest ever Liverpool player?
I love Luis Suarez. Oof. Yeah.
Ooh.
I know, it's a bit controversial, but...
Oh, no, it's not. It's not. I mean, it's everything to love about him.
Yeah, it is.
Everything to love about him.
I just loved his rawness and, like, how he did it. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not sure if... Will we have time to do a couple of soccer bollocks questions?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Of course we've got time.
That's just my opinion on Suarez, by the way. You've probably got bigger greats like Gerrard.
Of
course. And, he excited me so much.
Yeah. Are we ready?
Yes.
Here we go.
It's called soccer bollocks.
Talking soccer bollocks quiz.
Okay.
Your first goal for England was in a 6-0 win against Belarus.
Yes.
What stadium were you at?
Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Yes. You know what? The only reason I know that is because Nottingham Forest versus Luton the other day, the reporter actually told me that. So thank you.
There you go. You won goal of the year in 2015 in a 2-2 draw. Who was it against?
Sunderland.
Yeah.
Oh, I am flying. Yes. Here we go.
Tegan Mika has just signed for Liverpool. She's the current number two in the Matildas squad. What club does the number one keeper for the Matildas play for?
West Ham.
Yes.
Oh, my Mackenzie God. Arnold. This is just...
And she's captained.
Drop the mic.
Now, in your dark days playing for Everton, our opinion.
Dark days.
And there's only one Aussie playing for the Toffees right now. Who is it?
So for the men, for the women, Wheeler.
Yes!
Oh my God, this is so good.
In the last 12 months, who had the fastest record shot in global football? Strike of the ball, fastest, most power.
The ball speed.
Kelly.
Yes!
Kelly Here we go.
What number does Harvey Elliott wear for Liverpool?
Everyone gets this one wrong, FYI.
Connie, you watched him last night.
What? I don't know why I'm thinking 45.
It's 19. I'm so sorry.
Oh, Harvey.
Okay, who has the most headed Premier League goals in history?
Oh, it's got to be Alan Shearer.
It's Peter Crouch, but Alan Shearer is second.
Ooh,
yeah,
okay.
Everybody says Shearer.
Yeah.
Who was the young player who got the red card for England in the last Women's World Cup?
Oh, yes, Lauren James.
Yes.
I think that's 6 out of 8.
That's not bad, is it? Okay.
You killed him.
That's the bounty. I got like 3 were like
that. Look at my competitiveness.
Is that the best ever? You're on the leaderboard.
I think that's the best ever. You're on the podium.
Yes.
There you go.
I love it. You think like you've had this, by any standard, hugely successful football career, right? But now you're entering this next phase of your life, which is it's gonna have different things, around it. Like, so if you think about like success, if I asked you what success was like 10 years ago, you'd say scoring goals.
Yes.
Probably. But what does success mean for you in this next phase?
I love that question. I think for me, I'd like to think that I've left a legacy footballing wise. And now it's about leaving a legacy in this role as an ambassador. So I really want to have an impact in, I want to see more girls getting the opportunity and boys, but probably my passion is more girls.
Of course.
Because it's still not easy enough to play football. Mm-hmm. I really want to help grassroots football, because I think that so much money is pumped into the top two leagues and the Lionesses, but I still think there's a massive gap between that and the grassroots.
Yep.
So I want to make sure that still continues. For me, it's just about every day trying to make people's days better. You know, whether it's going into the lounges and meeting new faces, meeting new people, just really trying to be a good person, as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining Inside Rights UK Tour today. Look, I think your career has been exceptional. A powerhouse number 9, Liverpool legend and Everton. but thank you so much for joining Inside Rights UK Tour. To remind you of Melbourne victory, some Tim Tams.
Yes, I love Tim Tams.
And for you to remember, Inside Right, here's the shirt.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
Oh, this isn't going to be good for my waistline, but, this brings back good memories.
You can't eat them one at a time.
Tim to a cup of tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Natasha Dowie.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Awesome.